हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, Bhagavad Sandarbha, Adhyayana 3, Adhikarna 3, Transcendental Attributes of Bhagavan, page 58. Let me surrender to you, Bhagavan, who are the condensed form of pure knowledge, and because you are bliss itself. You have forms with many qualities. Your desires are always fulfilled. Because of your Surup Shakti, you are never touched by the material gunas. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:37-22. According to this statement, the forms are aspects of the Lord's eternal Surup Shakti. Since, yata, material understanding cannot take place without making names, etc., for all objects seen. Therefore, tata, because of that, you, who are self-accomplished, are praised by the sages and Vedas through various names, such as Krishna, which are also self-accomplished, which are the essence of the Vedas, and which are beyond all material proofs. While rejecting all manufactured meanings and names as your designations, you are not praised by other manufactured names. Your glory is revealed by these names with great power, or your glory is made evident by these names. Right? So we're talking about the attributes of the Lord. So names will describe attributes. Right? So that's always going to be how it works. So names are given to things so that we can describe them, so we can discuss. So Krishna's names aren't given. They're inherent, right? Because the qualities are coming from him. Therefore, his qualities and how he applies those qualities, that's inherent to him. Right? Like that. And because it's coming from him, they're transcendental. So by associating those names, one becomes transcendental. By these authorized names, well known in scriptures, the Lord is quickly realized. These names have power even if uttered to mean some other object, Sanketa. These names are self-accomplished, whereas other names are manufactured. Right? So it's the glories of the names that is there. One always so you're trying to bring out how Krishna's glories are special. Let's say the pastime of Ajamil. So now he's calling out, you know, this aspect of Sanketa. He's calling out the name of his son, who Narad Muni got him to name Narayana. Right? So he's meaning his son when he says Narayana. He's not meaning the Supreme Lord. Right? So, but still, the power of the name is still there. Even you mean it's something else. Now, from one perspective, we might look at it that, oh no, but unless it's a pure name, you know, you're not going to get liberated and this and that and so many things like this. But we have to remember that this argument was already presented by Gopal Chopla and it didn't work out very good for him. Right? Does that make sense? So this idea that liberation is so special and only by performing certain secondary activities then you can get to that platform of liberation, because we are the ones who get ourselves to liberation because of that particular endeavor that is, you know, authorized and accepted by everyone as the proper moralistic path. But is that the potency of the name? Or the name is potent because it comes from Krishna and it's inherently potent. So Krishna being beyond the modes of nature, therefore his name is beyond the modes of nature. And therefore his name can situate you beyond the modes of nature. So it's the glories of the name that get Ajamil liberated. Not that, oh no, it's got to be pure and all. You know, one chanting can clear all the sins of the universe. And then what's the comment? Oh, but that's only one pure chanting. No, it's not. Absolutely not. That's one nama bas. You're not even thinking of Krishna. You're thinking of, you know, what's for breakfast. See, it's because we're taking it that my endeavor, my values, my concept of morality is what makes things work. Rather than, no, it's Krishna that makes things work. It's his modes of nature. You're dealing with the shadow. But we take it as its substance. And so we make it that this is the thing. No, the point is that because we're taking it, liberation is the big thing. Liberation is the small thing. It's a side thing. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, it's like when you get the what do you call it? You buy the little what do you call it? I don't know, that container with the noodles in it. You know, you pour the hot water in there. It comes with a fork. No, but you know, you have to, you know, only by pious endeavor and pious activities and all that, and really hard work, then you can get this fork and all that. No, it comes automatically with the thing. No, but only the most pious and the most qualified, they can get the fork. No, it's just you pay the money, you get the fork. You understand? We're attached to karma and gyan. And because of that attachment, it blinds us to the actual position of pure devotional service. The Lord. So it's simply because of Krishna's name. Being Krishna's name and being transcendental, it's beyond anything of this material world. Liberation just comes as a side benefit. You know, it's just like if you order some fries, it comes on a plate. It's not that the waiter comes along and you had to hold out your hands and then he pours them into your hands and now what do you do with them? You understand? So that's the whole point, is bhakti is complete. It's not dependent on anything from this material world. It doesn't matter who you are, right? That's the verse. Papi tapi jato chilo hari namer udarilo. Right? Tarshaki jagai madhai. Not all jagai madhai did this or they did that. No. They're just sinful. That's all. And the Vaishnavs are kind. And the Lord's mercy follows the Vaishnavs, and therefore Hari Bol. There you have it. We have to understand, bhakti has nothing to do with this material. It has nothing to do with our concepts, our endeavor, our morality, none of that. It's independent. It does as it pleases. And so what's the key? The key is the association of Vaishnavs, not morality. We have to get over this attachment to mundane morality. And the sad part is this mundane morality isn't even coming from Shastra. Right? Unless you're taking it back to the Ten Commandments, then that's okay. But I kind of doubt very many people in this room are. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole point, is that it's not coming from God. It's just coming from, that's what I grew up in. We have to get over it. We have to get over ourselves. We have to accept that bhakti is independent. Bhakti is powerful on its own. It has nothing to do with us. Oh, I was so, you know, I was a searcher. I was looking. That's why I came to devotional service. No, it's not. It's because of the mercy of Vaishnavas you came to devotional service. And there's a good chance that Vaishnava that was merciful was a neophyte. You know, possibly, you know, 3 months, 6 months, you know, joined before you.
Yes.
Not an Uttamadhikari. You know, Nitya Siddha. No. It's the mercy of the Lord. The Lord's mercy follows the mercy of the devotees. Yes.
Here it's mentioned that the names of the Lord are inherent.
Yes.
But the names of objects, they're manufactured.
Yes.
However, we know from the creation, Bhagavatam is described that every object comes with the name. So how can we reconcile this?
Because that name is coming from, is Krishna's given that name, but then we give a name on top of it. Does that make sense? We take it that this name is what describes that object. rather than that object already has that name. So that's going to be one thing.
Yeah.
Then you're going to have the other aspect is that that name is there, but that name in the primary creation, what language would that be in?
Sanskrit.
Right. And so what's everybody else speaking?
Whatever.
Yeah, so that means it's all manufactured.
Okay.
Right? How many people are one? That's just even taking that, how many people are speaking in Sanskrit? But the point is it's manufactured because we say the name is then defining this rather than this already comes with the name, because then you're seeing it in the context of Krishna.
Right.
You know, it's like yesterday, what Mataji's saying is that, no, but it's like this, because they're already seeing the universal form in context of Krishna. But all the living entities here, the conditioned souls, all they're dealing with is the universal form. They don't see it connected to Krishna. Like the beauty of the forest, they're not seeing as part of the universal form. They're just seeing it that all these trees and it's natural and it's organic and all this, and that's why it's wonderful. You know what I'm saying? So they're manufacturing. The manufacturing is our perspective, because the reality is everything's already there. Everything's eternal. Right? And then you have here manifestations of eternal principles on a temporary basis. You know, so, but they're part of the universal form. So in that way, then they're always there. The primary creation is always an eternal principle. Right?
Yeah.
So we get confused between that it's already there. It's already Krishna. It's already Krishna. So material world is the consciousness of seeing it separate from Krishna. That's material. When you see everything connected to Krishna, that's spiritual. Same thing. Because then we're taking it from Krishna's point of view. Because why are they doing it? It's an inductive process. So then there's a name. Just like, let us say, you know, we take it from the Western kind of, historical position. But they didn't necessarily have the wide array of items that are there in the Vedic culture. That are just there when Brahma, you know, manifests them. And so then they're starting off. So therefore then fire needs a name. A wheel needs a name. Right? But in Sanskrit, it's like you said, it comes with it. It's already its name, its form, what it can do. Everything's already created in the primary creation. But we're seeing it from the inductive aspect. When we see from the deductive, then we don't have this fault at all. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is switching the consciousness. So Krishna's names are inherent because he has those qualities. Those qualities, then you can use words to define them. So it's a matter of switching the perspective. Yes.
So can we say, for example, Dwara, it's an inherent name for whatever it is, but then if we say gate, it's not an inherent name for that object.
Same time as, yeah, means you would have that definitely. That's obvious that that's been put. But the same way is door just means that it's an opening and that you can close it and all that. The gate generally means it's something more grand or, you know, something like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, you know, or in Danish, I think the old Danish, then they would say the mansion's mouth. That's at least what they use in Beowulf. Right? Because that's how you get into something. Like, things get in your body through your mouth. So therefore, then you go into the house through the door. So that's the mansion's mouth. You know. So from that aspect, then you can say definitely we've given the name. But we're talking about a subtler form where we're inductively looking at it, and therefore then what's the name of, you know, we're trying to find that there's a name that's not necessarily, it just describes the thing. So the point that the names are inherent because they're qualities. The qualities in the primary creation and the potency is Krishna's. It may be transformed from the internal to the external, but it's still Krishna's qualities. That's why it's inherent. Mm-hmm. But we're not looking at it as Krishna's qualities. Therefore, we're giving names. You know, and as we go in time, it's always the fun is that you give names to things that aren't necessarily what it is. And we give our own names to it. Or, you know, like you have nicknames. They have a name, but you have a nickname for them. You know what I'm saying? So it just brings us down more and more into that aspect of attachment rather than the other way. Because even with the Lord, the nicknames are inherent. You know, like Nityananda, Nittai, Gadadhara, Gadai, you know, or Kanai, Balai. You know, they're all inherent in the qualities because they actually mean something. But the potency of that Abhida Shakti is coming from Krishna. Even the Lakshana, where you can use it in a poetic way that is indirect, that's still Krishna. Does that make sense?
Yes.
The question is about notes of Vaishnavas.
Mercy of Vaishnavas, okay.
Yes, we always meet notes of Vaishnavas, but sometimes when we also meet notes of beginners, yes? But sometimes when we care about them, they can misunderstand this point, and they can consider that if we fulfill their material or psychological desires, it will be service to Vaishnavas. Or sometimes they can fight with each other and both sides request you to help. And when we fulfill desires of this type of devotees, how to be sure that now I am act according to the will of Krishna?
Okay, how is it devotional? So the point is if we're serving Vaishnavas, even if they may be materially motive, what's your motive? Because devotion means it's you're the one performing the activity, so what's your motive?
We want that this Vaishnava stay in Krishna consciousness.
Yes, so then you're dealing with them in context of Krishna, even if they're looking at it from the material point of view. It's just like, let's say, you know, that time in Regent Park when Prabhupada's out there and they're feeding the ducks. So the ducks going, you know, going, hey, Mahaprasad, you know, it's like that. You know, pure devotees here, how often do we get that? You know, come on, you know, like that, you know. Like that, you know. Yeah, we had the queen go through here, but yeah, you know, but here, pure devotee, you know, are they saying that? No, they're just thinking food. So that's the whole point, is that because of the intent of the devotee, that's why it has that potency. It's not dependent upon the other person. That's what we're saying. Bhakti is independent. That's why Prabhupada says it's causeless mercy why we've come to devotional service. You know, this whole idea is, no, I was qualified, I was looking, I was a searcher, I was, you know, this, it has nothing to do with that. Because the thing is our context is we don't know who God is. We're coming from the mundane side. We have no access to God. There's a concept is there, a bigger concept, but as Bhagavan, we have no idea. You know, Brahman a little bit, Paramatma a little bit, but Bhagavan, not at all. So, it's devotees, they come, and because of their desire, therefore, then there's that. You know, so if we're looking at it that, okay, we're doing the festival, you know, we got to get good PR and all that, okay, you'll get PR. But if you're looking at it, we'll have the festival and people will be connected with the holy name and the culture of Krishna consciousness, and this way they'll get benefited, then that's what happens. We have to understand it's Krishna that makes it happen, not us. We're an instrument. You know what I'm saying? It's just like the spoon is the one contacting the vegetables in the pot, but the spoon's not doing the cooking. The spoon's moving them around, but the spoon's not doing the cooking. It's doing a secondary aspect that's supportive of cooking. Right? The hand is doing the cooking. What does the hand want?
Yeah.
So we have to ask the hand, so you're saying talk to the hand.
I mean, for example, two sides of devotees fight with each other.
Yeah, so you stay out of it. You know, sit on the side, eat popcorn. Do something. Text message, you know, go to the bathroom. But, you know, don't get involved. When the dust settles, then you can do something. That makes sense. The point is that Krishna is the if you have two devotees, you know, fighting, that means there's a difference of opinion. What's the difference of opinion about? Whether Krishna's God or not, or no. So it's about secondary items. How to serve Krishna? What is service to Krishna? What is the proper service in this situation? So the only thing that can reconcile contradictory elements is Krishna. So if you can inject Krishna consciousness into the situation, then you do. And if you can't, then you have to sit back. You know? Right? Unless it's a direct family member or, you know, best friend, then you might have to appear that you're taking a side. But it's not as much there as afterwards, then, you know, you don't talk to the other person or something. But that's just a social thing, because then they're supported. Because the other person then, if now two people aren't talking with them, it just gives more taste. Right, so they're fine. Does that make sense?
For Maharaj, our real endeavor is only to have the real intent.
Yes.
Try to keep the intent.
To keep the intent. So all the secondary aspects that we deal with is just as an expression of our pure intent. That's the whole point, is that cooking, that Mother Jashoda cooks, is to express her love for Krishna. Or she bathes Krishna, or arranges the house, or arranges ornaments and clothes. It's all to express her love for Krishna. It's not about the clothes. It's not about the food. It's that these are the mediums. So now we can say, okay, so if the mediums aren't the important thing, it's just the devotion. We don't need the mediums. But then now we're dealing with impersonalism. Right, because that's impersonal philosophy, is that the generic is more important than the personal aspect. So if these are that, what we're saying is it's the personal that's important. The secondary, the impersonal, is not the thing. Cooking is an impersonal concept. It has various principles of how it works. The mechanics, all the mechanics is all impersonal. Right? Now, it's applied to please Krishna. Right? So now you can say, but, you know, they can all be applied. Yes, but they're all different, because in different situations, you're pleasing Krishna differently. Like, when he's with Mother Jashoda in Nanda Bhavan, you're going to deal with him in one way. The cowherd boys, let's say. When he goes out into the fields, they'll deal in a different way. Because they can't deal with him in that way, like in the fields in Nanda Bhavan. Right? There they have to deal, that is pleasing to Mother Jashoda. Right? They have to be nice boys. Right? They can't be crazy and yelling and screaming and challenging each other and doing all kinds of, you know, fun stuff. So, that's the whole point, is that they have to deal with Krishna in there, because then at that point, now he's the darling of Jashoda. Right? So that means it has there's a particular elements of the field and how you use them, because the field can be used in so many ways. Right? That's what we're saying. It's impersonal. It has all these contexts of how it can be used. Right? But still, these fields are still, even though it's impersonal, it's still coming from the person. It's the quality of the person that it's happening. Is that something? Yeah. So the difficulty is because we're used to dealing with the secondary and not the primary, because primary means Krishna. So we're dealing with the names, the qualities, the endeavors you can make, results you can get, identities you have, but not connected to Krishna. So since that is already an impersonal, that's basically, you can say, an impersonal base, you know, element, that if we're only dealing with the secondary, by nature we're going to be impersonalists. That's why the more you're absorbed in the external energy, the more impersonal you are. Even people say, no, but we're, you know, we're all about the people and all that. But it's the people, not a person. means that liberal person who's about the people, how many friends do they have? Close, intimate friends. Not very many. How many family members do they even talk to? Not very many. You understand? So, it's impersonal. That's the whole thing, is that we project it as if it's personal. But it's maximum we're getting up to the level of Paramatma. He's a person, but we're not dealing with him as a person. We're dealing with him as the one who controls material energy. You pray to him, you know, and your kid passes the exam. But it's not about whether God wants your son to pass the exam or not. You know, it's just the son needs to pass the exam, we go to God. Does that make sense? So, that he's the one controlling, that you go to him, that's good, that's pious. But it's still not actually devotional. You have to apply some devotion, you have to say your prayers feelingly. But it's not actually what we'd call pure bhakti. Does that make sense? So this idea that, so that we understand what is pure devotional service, that's what we're trying to get to.
Mm-hmm. The difficulty is to keep that goal.
Yes, but that's why association is there. That's why you associate with those who are more advanced. Because they're more advanced and they're thinking of Krishna more than you are. That's why they're more advanced. Right? So then there's more opportunity that you are going to think of Krishna. Right? And then we read. So we're associating with the acharyas, we chant the holy name, we're associating with Krishna. And so that way then we'll get more exposure. You know? Does that make sense? Yes? No? Okay, so.
Is there a way of expressing our love to Krishna in case of defining the words or using the language? I mean, is there a way to reconnect our understanding of any object or identity?
Yes, because that's what language is for. Language is for doing that, because when it's in context of Krishna, then it's in its natural state. If we're talking about the mundane, then it's simply imposed.
What means that for us, like when it's in original way, we should be like changing our language in a certain way, or?
No, it's how you're using it. It's just like, let's say we have the devotee cooking potatoes, and we have the karmi cooking the same recipe of potatoes. What's the difference? Recipe is the same, techniques are the same, taste will be the same. So what's the difference? The karmi's cooking it, the devotee's cooking it.
Devotion.
Devotion. So that's the point. You're simply adding devotion. Because that's what's missing. See, we're taking it, we have to be careful to understand is all the knowledge and techniques of this world, they're from Krishna. They're Krishna's knowledge and techniques. They're not ours. We may notice them, then we call it ours. But that's like children. Right? Children go out somewhere, they find something on the ground, no one else is around, now they found it, it's theirs. Right? That's the way they work. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole idea. That's why Prabhupada says thieves. It belongs to someone else and we take it and claim it's ours. So it's Krishna's. It's Krishna's knowledge. So this whole idea, oh, we have to have knowledge and skills, that will make bhakti work. No, that has nothing to do with it. Bhakti is independent. The knowledge and skills that you're trying to learn are already Krishna's. You know, you understand? So, if we have an attachment to knowledge and skills, naturally we use that in Krishna's service. We do that and learn it and use it for Krishna. But to think that it's independent from Krishna and it's what makes everything happening, that means we're thinking karma makes bhakti work or jnana makes bhakti work. I say karma because generally this knowledge and skills is not in the field of detachment, so it's called karma. If it's in the field of detachment, that's called jnana. Right? I have not met very many detached academics. But, Yes.
This reading in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is that Lord Chaitanya really gives Krishna consciousness to anyone, including Jagar and Madhai, and then he says what to speak of those who are already pious and elevated.
Yes.
So I was wondering, those who are considered pious and elevated, do they have more opportunity to take advantage? Is that what it's implying, that they have more opportunity?
It just means that there's more content. It's just like this. Jagai and Madhai, how often are they inviting Brahmins or Vaishnavs over to their house for lunch and taking care with all attention and focus? Right? How often are they giving in charity to the Vaishnavs and Brahmins? When's the last time they sat in a Bhagavatam class? You understand? So they're just doing nothing. And they're getting the mercy, let alone someone who's pious and is trying to do the right thing. Right? Whether it's purely motivated or not, but it's still, there's a chance. That's why, that's the whole point, is that karma and jnana, they have the underlying element of bhakti to make them work. Because in karma, you have to, you know, feed, give in charity, do all these different things. You know, in jnana, you have to be detached, you have to be renounced, you have to see everything in from the metaphysical platform. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah, so you're already seeing this. So now if you come in contact with Krishna consciousness, then you just change the consciousness. You know, it's just like, let's say we have a smarta Brahman. He's getting up every day during the Brahma Muhurta, taking his bath and everything, putting on his tilak, sitting down, doing his puja. You know, reading the Gita and everything. Then, the breakfast is being cooked. It's offered to the deity. Then he's taking the remnants like this. But in his mind, he's just doing all this for elevation to heavenly planets or liberation. So there's technically no bhakti. Now, if he comes in contact with a devotee, then all he has to do is change the consciousness. He's already living the lifestyle. So it's easier. That's why it's recommended for us, you know, following a varnashram and all these recommended religious principles, because it just makes it easier for bhakti. You know, and our idea is, bhakti's independent, so we don't require any things, you know, it's beyond the rules, spontaneous, so I don't need any of this religion. Okay. But you'll see, as if you actually analyze the person who's saying that, they do very, you know, comfortably and possibly even efficiently give up all the Vedic religious processes, but they in no way, shape, or form give up their conditioned religious processes at all. You know, someone does something wrong and it's 20 years later and, but he did that. Where does that come from? Is that from Vaishnavas? Is that Vedic? Or is that Christian? Eternal damnation is what religion? It's nothing to do with Vedic. Vedic, someone does something and they're punished for it, you cannot bring it up again. You can't even, in a snarky comment, bring it up. You know, after 12 years, it's just not brought up. That's a mahapap. Let alone something else that's small. But in the modern tradition that's so liberal, we'll just keep on going until forever. Because we take it, retribution as the thing that actually makes things work, not Krishna's laws, pleasing Krishna. Right? And is it based on something? Is it based on, you know, what the Old Testament gives? No. Therefore, it's Protestant within Christianity. Does that make sense? So instead of being Vaishnav by philosophy, and Vedic by religion, they're Vaishnav by philosophy and Protestant by religion. You know, you remove all the nasty stuff. You know, you follow the four regular principles. You understand? But otherwise, their idea of charity, that's where it stands. It doesn't change. You know, how often do devotees in a community invite each other over for a meal? So that's Western, not Vedic. You understand? So in other words, whatever karma lifestyle someone grew up in. They'll maintain that, just purify it a bit, and add the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. But then when it comes to the culture and the philosophy, there's so much speculation. Right? Prabhupada says, philosophy without religion is mental speculation. And religion without philosophy is sentiment. Right? So those who don't follow the Vedic religion and follow the philosophy make snide comments about the Hindus. Because they're just sentimental. But it's the pot calling the kettle black. Does that make sense? Because all it is they're just the other side of the same coin. So the point is that these things are given because they situate yourself in goodness. What in the modern context, in the modern religion, situates you in goodness? Right? Why do you do what you do? Right? By the very cutting edge liberal thing. It's because you want to. Not that you have to. All things that you have to are thrown out. Except for the things that they say are. Of course. You can't go against the rules set down by the liberals. Does that make sense? You know, we're not talking about your average person, because your average person generally is God conscious and accepts some aspects of tradition. We're talking about the more educated, more liberal ones that think that they really know what they're doing. Right? It's all about themselves. It's just anamoy. And the extent of pranamoy is everybody should be doing what they're saying. But economically, is it viable? Does it make money? Does it do anything? Does it actually create community? Does that make sense? So the whole point is it's always backwards from what is. The mode of ignorance makes good look bad and bad look good. You know what I'm saying? It's just the way it goes. You know, it's just like how you say, for the liberals, the main political that they don't talk about it is control. It's the liberals who will control you. It's the conservatives that are about freedom. Right? Don't control me, I won't control you. And the liberals is, we're going to control everybody because we have our standards and everyone has to follow. So when you have fraternity and equity, they'll work on the equity. Fraternity, they'll never have. It's as long as your fraternity is based on the political position. So these three features will be your modern, you know, democratic society. Conservatives, it's the liberty. And the liberals, it's the fraternity and equity. But the focus is on equity. And the equity means I do whatever I want. And you allow anybody else to do whatever you want. As long as it's within the context of what we say is what is within what everybody wants to do. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say, you have a gay pride parade. Okay? Now, by the liberal, you have to allow that. And if you make any comments about it, then you are narrow-minded. Okay. But if we're talking equality, what if we had a heterosexual parade? Every last gay on the planet or any liberal person would be making comments about that. And how saying it's bad and it's terrible and who are these guys and why are they... So where's the equity? There is no equity. It's just a cover for control. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. The material world is designed in such a way that it doesn't have... It's covered by ignorance, so people don't know. They don't know that the soul, they don't know anything about Krishna. And they take it that these secondary aspects are what's so important. Therefore, you have right and left. It's already duality. With Vaishnavas, you just have one path. We say one path. We don't say that there's two paths. Krishna in the Gita says there's one path. You can go either towards Krishna or away from Krishna. You have options what you want to do with the one path. But there's only one path. You know, these other philosophies, that, you know, whatever your philosophy, there's that many paths. No, there's one. Because it's Krishna. It's His. The material world is His. It works according to His laws. Therefore, when we see it in the context of how He sees it, how He's made it, then things work. So, the pious person means he's accepting the secondary laws of God, but not necessarily accepting God. Right? While the impious person doesn't accept God and doesn't accept the secondary laws. So that's why, and if they can be saved, why wouldn't someone who at least accepts the laws be able to be saved? Whether they want to be saved, that's another thing. Because they're following the laws, things generally go nicely for them, so they may not think about the Lord. While you know, but they won't do anything too bad, but they won't necessarily surrender. While someone who doesn't do things according to the tradition, then the difficulty comes up is then things go bad for them, and occasionally they'll want to know what's going on. And if at that moment they come in contact with the Vaishnavas, then they can move forward. And if they don't, then something's wrong.
What I understand is there such a thing as an advantageous position for taking Lord Chaitanya's mercy?
Is there an advantageous position? You mean staying in the association of the devotees?
But before we start practicing, before we've met the devotees.
But what does that matter? You know what I'm saying? The point is how would that be an application? Because if we're not a devotee, why would we be worried about what would be advantageous for becoming a devotee? It would never come to mind. Does that make sense? And for us, why would we be trying to make people pious when we can make them with the same endeavor, Krishna conscious? Because Krishna consciousness includes piety, but piety doesn't include Krishna consciousness. So if we're going to the trouble of trying to raise them the mode of goodness, it's a matter of consciousness. That same activity being done in connection with Krishna will make you Krishna conscious. So we wouldn't be endeavoring to try to raise people to goodness, especially when we come from a background of ignorance with a sprinkling of passion. So it's like we wouldn't know mode of goodness if it came up and slapped us in the face. Does that make sense? Mode of goodness is doing something because you're supposed to. Because we're thinking, oh no, but we're teaching them yoga and we're trying to bring them to goodness. But why are the people doing the yoga? Because it's good for their health. Right? It's good for their figure, so that means it's better for sex. So where's the goodness in here? That's pure passion. And it's mixed with ignorance because they think they're the body. So where is this mode of goodness that this devotee is teaching them and elevating them so it'll be easier for them to become Krishna conscious in the future? It doesn't exist. Read the last six chapters of Gita. Mode of goodness means you're doing this because you're supposed to do this. It's the law, it's the rule, it's the duty. I'm doing this because I should do this. And I'm doing this without desire for results. That's mode of goodness. And so if you're going to do that, why not do it for Krishna? You understand? So this whole idea of the soft preaching where we're just introducing the goodness, it's bogus. It's not mode of goodness. It's soft, it's not preaching. Just because it's soft doesn't mean it's good. Like you say someone's a wet noodle. That's not good. It's soft. You understand? So you have to understand as what you're dealing with. If it's connected to Krishna, that's devotional service. If it's indirectly connected to Krishna, you have to know a lot of philosophy and the culture to know how to do that. And so to avoid the culture and the philosophy and then say you're doing that? Huh? That's like children saying they're professionals. Literally. Good? Okay.
Regarding this, you gave example of yoga, teaching yoga.
Right.
That thing. By that, that people are getting association of Vaishnav.
But how are they associated with Vaishnavs? You say they're getting association of Vaishnavs, but if they don't know they're Vaishnavs, how are they getting association? What are they doing? What is the dynamic element of association that they're getting from the Vaishnavs? You know what I'm saying? So that if that's the case, just you in karmic clothes walking around the streets of Bombay, you're doing big preaching because everyone's getting the association of Vaishnavs. You know, so you want to do serious preaching, so you take breakfast after breakfast. You know, you go out and walk around Bombay all day. You know, you go to all the places where the most people are. You know, you go down to, you know, BT station and all these different places, you know, old Bombay, and walk around like that and be back in time in the evening for, you know, getting ready for the evening program and prashad and all that. And then you can say, I did some fabulous preaching today. You know, and so, you know, it's because, you know, it was, how you say, extra people came to Bombay today, you know, so, you know, it was really big preaching today, you know, like that. There was a political rally, you know, downtown, so an extra few hundred thousand people came. So, you know, yeah, it was some really good preaching today. You know, it means we can say these things. That's the whole point, is that's the problem with this modern newspeak. You ever heard of 1984, the book?
Yeah.
So 1984, one of the principles in it is called newspeak. Newspeak means that the government puts out a perspective on things and gives names to things as is useful to them politically. So you take one thing that yesterday is bad, people are the enemies, but now something's happened, you change, now they're the friends, and people were the friends, they're the enemies. That's called newspeak. In modern language, because that's old, he wrote that, I think, back in the 30s or something like that. 20 like this. So the modern name of this is called political correctness. It's just newspeak. Just because you call it by this name, it's good. Just like, let's say, how long have Indians been using turmeric in their cooking? Right? Well, that means the last 2-3 years since the West figured out that turmeric is a really good thing and good for your health, right? Right, okay. So they've been using it forever. Right? So every spice, if you take it, each one of them has a medicinal value. The techniques that they're using for cooking, they don't overcook something, they don't undercook something. You know what I'm saying? So they're very careful. So the cooking, Indian cooking, is healthy. Right? But in the modern context, in modern society, unless the West says it's healthy, it's not healthy. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. It's always been there. So now we look at it. It's preaching because, you know, in the West it says this is good. But what has it got to do with reality? You know, Krishna dadati prati grinati guhyam akadi preachati bunte bodhayate chayva. That's preaching. That's association. That's Vaishnav seva. So what is going on in the yoga studio? Are you giving them the shad? Are they hearing music that's Krishna conscious? Are there Krishna conscious pictures on the wall? You know, just because everyone's in leotards, how is that going to make them advance in Krishna consciousness? You can say, oh, it's yoga, it's Indian. Yeah, so many things are Indian. You know what I'm saying? It's called aparavidya. It's what he's talking about. The Western, it's sinful. The Vedic, it's pious. And then there's bhakti. So just because it's something connected to Indian, yeah, but the point is you're doing the yoga, but what's everybody wearing? Are you there in your dhoti and chadar? You ever seen pictures of actual yogis doing yoga? Are they in leotards or sweatpants? No, they're in dhotis and chadars. Literally. They know how to put them on so that they stay on when they do their yoga asanas. We don't know, so when we put our legs up in the air, then, you know, everything is seen. But they know how to put them on, so that doesn't happen. So the whole point is, it's just an excuse for us. And who's doing yoga? Who's at the yoga studio teaching yoga? They never did yoga before they became a devotee, and they were never much inclined to yoga before becoming a devotee. Only afterwards they saw the opportunity. Hey, we can preach in the yoga studios, so therefore I learn a little bit, you know, I get a few books, learn a little yoga and stuff like that. No, if someone has a karmi, they were totally into yoga. That's who's teaching it. And what are they wearing? What they wore as a karmi. What are they doing? What they did as a karmi. So we're not saying you can't preach in a yoga studio. But who's talking the philosophy? Because the point is, you talk Vedanta philosophy, they will listen to it in a yoga studio. But who cares about Vedanta philosophy? Because they say, oh, that's too technical. We're keeping it simple. But the point is, you go in and start talking the technicalities of how karma yoga works mechanically. They'll listen. And you show how it connects to the absolute. How it is, how you change the consciousness. That's preaching in a yoga studio. But here it's no, we won't get into all that. So they won't do a kirtan, they won't talk to philosophy. You know, and are they doing prasad? Because it doesn't matter what you bring to the table, someone's going to not like it because it's not healthy enough. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, because everyone's so individual on their own. When those people leave the yoga studio, they have nothing to do with each other. So where's the community? Community means what you do when it's not at a festival. That's community. You understand? Yeah. Okay? Good.
One more in another direction. Tanaha dushataha kruran samsareshu naradhavam shipami ajasya masuha. That Krishna is telling in Bhagavad Gita that I put them in hell for rest of, you know, life after life. So how do I understand properly what Krishna is speaking here?
Means the point is they're opposing the natural laws given by Krishna. And so therefore then he puts them in situations where they aren't bound by those particular laws that they're trying to break, but at the same time as they're still under Krishna's laws. Because Krishna puts into these species of life, and in these species then they're going to have to act in a particular way. You know what I'm saying? And so they do that for a while, they get frustrated, and after they get frustrated, then they start to ask why. And then they start back up the cycle of samsara. Right? Because the point is, because of their pride, that's why they behave badly. So then the situation gets worse and worse. It's hard to be proud. Until it gets so bad, you just have to surrender. Then they become humble. Then they start up the cycle. So that's all it is that someone, you know, because of the proper attitude, then they develop nicely until they get proud, and then they start to go down. So we see in Krishna consciousness that idea that I'm not the doer, and that humility, that tolerance, that's what makes things work. So if that's what makes things work to get up to the top of the cycle of samsara, to go beyond that would be the same principle, adding Krishna consciousness. In other words, why do you go up unless being humble and tolerant is pleasing to Krishna? That's the attitude in which he likes to interact with people. Right? So therefore, even you do that without bhakti, it'll elevate you in samsara. But when you add bhakti to that, then that takes you back to Godhead. But if you don't add bhakti to it, it'll just elevate you up in samsara. And generally more pious people, then they're open more to Krishna consciousness. And it's like this one family, you know, they would have been Italian, they would be, you know, Catholic background, you know, so the whole family's there, you know, the grandmother, I guess grandfather had died, so the grandmother's kind of like the head of the family. And they all have dinner together, 15 of them. You know, one big table, all 15 of them sitting there. And that's the rule. You know, everybody sit, not you sit in the next room and eat on the couch watching television, someone else in their room, you know. No, they all sit there. And when they're sitting there, then naturally then they talk about what they do. you know, what they did in the day, anything different or anything unique or anything or something they thought about. And then it comes up and that's family discussion. So one day at the dinner table, then grandma says, so what's happening today? And like, and so one of the kids there, then they say, well, you know, I was out today and I bumped into this Hare Krishna. And I discussed philosophy with them for so many hours and this and that, asked so many questions. They asked it all, my doubts about, you know, all these different things like that. So I'm thinking I want to, you know, take up this Krishna consciousness. Right? So that's being said at the table. And so then the grandmother says, so if you've gone through it, you've seen that it's good and you've asked all that and you think that, that being a devotee is good, then I think we should all become devotees. That's community. That's family. Not this modern mumbo jumbo. You understand? So the whole point is you have to see is that that's the advantage of piety. They're not proud. In other words, they're pious but not proud. If they're pious and proud, then there's nothing you can do with them. They're on their way down. It means you try, but if you don't see it, then what can you do? They're on their way down. And if they're pious and they're open to it, then that's great. Even if they're impious, if they're open to it. Point is it's a matter of whether the false ego you can get through or not. That's the point. If all they can do is argue for hours because they like arguing, then why waste your time? But if they're asking, they're arguing because they have points and they have doubts and all that, and you're clearing the doubts, that's worthwhile. But if it's just they love to argue and stuff, then what's the point? Does that make sense? You know, we're not here to support their mundane identity. So, we're good? Yes.
One person in Russia, if he wrote a book against Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, he associated with Smarty Brahmins, and he gave challenge to our philosopher. Bhaktivedanta Goswami Maharaj requested us to write him this life, but we were confused by two points. And one point is he wrote that we believe that Galoka is the highest planet, of, and it's more superior than Vaikuntha planets, mostly on the basis of Brahma Samhita. But he says that according to Vedic principle, all scriptures must be mentioned in another scripture. And he says that Brahma Samhita was not mentioned in any Upanishads or Puranas, if only Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu found it. So he thought, means that it's creation of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's not Shastra. And his second point, he said that we believe that Srimati Radharani is a superior energy and Radha Krishna is a superior form of God. But he said that when we talk about Srimati Radharani, we usually mention Brihad Gautamiya Tantra, but he didn't find Brihad Gautamiya Tantra in any library of Vrindavan and Navadvipa, and he said that why the scripture also is creation of Gaudiya Vaishnava. We don't know.
So he's smart to Brahma, or you're saying, or the Goswami caste?
Actually, we don't know who he is, because we see that his views changed by time.
Yeah, of course, because that's going to, it's just something to do. The point is that he'll feel that everybody's doing this, it's the standard thing, I'm doing something unique and special, you know, therefore I'm special. But the point is people like this, they'll just burn themselves out. It's not that bad. element of that, Jiva Goswami wrote a book establishing how Radharani is the highest Lakshmi. So you can look for that book. That'll establish there. And, yeah, the point is that someone like this wouldn't understand what's being described anyway. He says it's only mentioned there, but then these others, why the Vaikuntha walls, they don't talk about Mahanarayan, right? He's the origin of all the Vaikuntha planets, so they don't talk about that. So where he stays, that's Goloka. So the others talk about it. Maybe they use the name, don't use the name, but so what? you know, it's Maha Vaikuntha. We don't hear that name. You understand? So it's just semantics. They argue over semantics. That's the thing, is they get lost. So just because he can't find it means it's not there, so then that's Buddhism. Buddhism is, he doesn't understand it, so it doesn't exist. So what does that have to do with anything? So the whole point is what's the goal of all this? Right? He's saying, you know, it doesn't there, but what's the goal of this? What does he want to establish? What is the highest then? Yes, so therefore, why not discuss that? Why just, he can take pot shots at this, he doesn't think this, he doesn't think that, but so many things, some people can say so many things. You know what I'm saying? As far as so many people of the world, then, you know, Russians are, a very rough and ready bunch and low class and want to take over the world. So is that how Russians think? No. So, but that's how many people else in the world think. You know what I'm saying? So then why don't we discuss that? You know, he's written a book in Russian, so that means he must support the Russian culture. So does that mean he supports the Russian world domination? Why didn't he write in German or French? But he's not, because he's Russian. They'd never write it in German, French. Maybe English, but never German and French. You know what I'm saying? So the point is, he just changed the thing. Why is it he's establishing what we argue over? Why not we bring up stuff? Okay, if it's not the high, what is the highest planet? What is the highest position? Because then you get him into an area that he's uncomfortable in. Because all he can do is find faults. So fault finders will stick to their thing and will find another point. So what is the ultimate goal? What is the ultimate purpose? You know, are we talking about, he's talking about it, this is a fault, a small detail, and you know. And he's talking about this is the big thing that's the make it or break it for the whole Gaudiya line. But the point is no. Is it about, are we worshiping, you know, seeing God as the supreme or not? Is he a person or not? These are the main things. This is a detail within it. You know what I'm saying? He's arguing over whether you use pumpkin seeds in salad or not. You know? But the point is, you know, why don't we discuss what's food? So you don't have to deal on his platform. So if he only has these two points, so?
He also said that he begins like a follower of Madhava Sampradaya, but he finishes like an atheist.
Yeah, yeah. So therefore, take the atheist part. Otherwise, why would he fight like this? Madhvas don't make so many comments about us. Yes.
Mahabhu says that it is like that, and he is, you know, provably the supreme authority. So on that ground also, it could be argued that...
Yeah, could also be argued from that. Him as the supreme lord, and if he reveals it, then what's the problem? So then you have to deal with our avatars and all this and that. Yes?
On the morning walk, Srila Prabhupada says, if I say something that is the truth and somebody argues and doesn't want to surrender, so who will judge? He's asking. And then the disciples just suggested something. So Prabhupada said, no, death will judge.
Death will judge, yeah. That's what he told that professor in Moscow. So then you have that, you say that, we say this, and at the time of death, then we'll know who's right.
Yes, he just worries that new devotees, if they will read his book, they will be confused, try to fight.
Yeah, but then you give them good association and all that, so... The point is that anything alternative, anything different, anything unique and all that, because here's you have, it means two places means everybody has it. If you're in the material world, there's always a point of authority because Krishna is the ultimate authority. We want to get around that. But you'll find two cultures specifically have a real problem with this. Russians and Americans. Right? It's because you have the element of, you have the concept, at least American, I don't know what it is in the Russian concept, but it's called the man. Right? You know, so in other words, the institutions that control you, you just refer to him as the man. You know, the government, you know, comes and gets you. This comes and gets you. The bureaucracy gets you. It's all that. You're controlled by the man. Right? So then you have that they're worried about the control. And so then anything that's alternative must be better. Does that make sense? You know, the mystical, the different, the uniqueness and all that. And so that's the particular contamination of the modes of those areas. You know, and everybody has their own unique what's their problem. But here it's always the aspect of authority. Like most other places, the concept that there's authority and tradition isn't so bad. You know, like we heard last year when that disaster happened with Notre Dame. Even the atheists are feeling bad because of the tradition of Notre Dame and, you know, what it stands for and all that kind of things. But in other places, they don't really care. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the whole point is this concept of tradition and all that has a value that specifically doesn't have so much value in these two places. So that's just their particular conditioning. So because of that, they can give up something so easily and take up something new. Right? Whatever they've done their whole life, they can drop it in a moment and take up something new. That's the advantage of those two places. But the disadvantage is then to accept culture and tradition. That's hard for them. So they're generally the two places that always argue the most about following the Vedic stuff or not. You know, or if it's Vedic, it has to be alternative to what we're doing is Vedic. You know, does that make sense? So you can't tell the difference between the two. All right, so the one is if it's more mystical or the other was more practical. That's how you tell the difference. Does that make sense? Then everywhere else, it's that there's tradition they follow, that these things, it's easy. You know, in other words, if Varnashram is alternative, then they'll do it. If it's this is the way you have to do it, then they won't do it. But the other places, it's tradition, that's why, then it makes more sense. In a sense. So it's just a matter of the modes of nature. So we have to be able to go understand that we have particular modes and then how that works, how that functions, how to engage that in Krishna's service. So you just find another avenue, you know, like these devotees are pointing out, is that you establish the position of Lord Chaitanya. That you can do through the scripture. Now, if he is the Supreme Lord and he says, and scripture comes from the Lord, even if he did write it, it's still coming from him. So what's the problem? Right? And if it's the mudras, they don't have a problem. It's used for the mudra that they establish. So the point is this, if you keep changing, that means there's no philosophy, then it's just a matter of fault finding. Mm-hmm. And you want to fault find, okay, you can fault find with us. Why not? So many others are there. Why not? Well, you know, it's like, he's definitely got an occupation cut out for him. You know? Does that make sense? Another meaning is, quote, O Lord, you are the supreme Brahman, the sole entity, to whom names cannot be applied, end quote. The Lord cannot be the subject of manufactured names because then he becomes qualified. Viseshana karoti. Because then he becomes qualified, right? We've given the name, that's why he's qualified. You know, it's just like, let's say, there's a person. No one knows who it is. So then I say something about him. Now he becomes qualified. Right? But Krishna is inherently qualified. Right? He performs actions and he changes, vikari. You are avikari. You are not born Jayate in that form. Thus you are called Aja. Right? So it's not because of us giving the name, therefore there's actions, therefore there's these adjustments. It's a matter of he's always like this. This is him. Right? That's the whole point. We're used to something's created. The material world's created. Right? And then we put the language together with the item. But it's inherent. Krishna, he is who he is. So doubt. What can be the reason for giving you names? Right to the Lord. Uttara. Without designating names, the meaning of objects cannot be understood. Then how can you be understood without giving you a name? But since manufactured names cannot represent the essential nature of anything, you are praised by names like Krishna, which indicate your qualities, and which give all purusharthas, just as you yourself do, even if contemplated by accident. You are praised by the eternally perfect Shruti and Puranas, using words and names, not by imaginary words indicating impersonalism. Right? So here's a key then what the imaginary manufacturers, they indicate impersonalism, rather than personalism. So you see is that they're ascending names rather than descending. Like that. That's it. The four names mentioned in the verse, Krishna, Achyuta, Ananta, and Vishnu, are representative of other names. For it is said that other names like Narayana also have great power if uttered by accident. Upavarsha says, Varna eva tu shabda. The syllables are authoritative sound. Tasya cha nityatvat. Jivas and devatas are controllers because of the eternal will of the Lord. Right? So they're in their position and they have their authority because of the Lord. He gives that to them. Brahma Sutra 2.4.16. Similarly, syllables are eternal by the will of the Lord. Like that, Narayanad Udbhuto Yam Varna Kramaha, right? The Varnas, they come from Narayana, right? So therefore, they're eternal by the will of the Lord. Since the syllables are eternal, the names composed of syllables, which are the essence of the Vedas, are also eternal. Brahma says, Tesh Vakshareshu Bhavish Yaj Jagat Rupam Prakashaya. The Lord revealed the future universe within the syllables of the mantra. Gopaltapani Upanishad 1.26. The names of the Lord are shown to be self-accomplished, since they are unique in causing the universe. These names arose when the Lord appeared. The names have the unique quality of being non-different from the Lord's sarup. Because everything coming from the Lord, then therefore they're non-different from the Lord. Right? But when you're talking about the impersonal and then trying to apply that to the Lord, that's then where it doesn't have the aspect. So if it's coming from what is the authorized qualities that are there that the Vedas mention, then that's one thing. But if you're using other than that, you're manufacturing your own, then. Om asya janato nama chid viviktan mahaste vishno sumatim bhaja mahe om tat sad. Om Vishnu. O Vishnu, your name is spiritual and self-revealed. Knowing that name a little, not completely, just by chanting it, we have attained fine knowledge of you, because that Om is self-accomplished. Rig Veda 1.56.3. The other aspect is that you can ask, okay, so what Shastra does he accept as the supreme authority? Right? And if he says the Veda, then that includes Upanishads and that. Then you can look at the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Shiksha. No, it means Mahaprabhu or Siksha. There, all the evidence Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives is all from the Veda. So, yeah, that's all. They're just trying from an angle that you don't know, because devotees don't look at that necessarily so much, then, you know.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premananda.